Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRTLP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us online anytime at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. I'm your host. Thank you for tuning in today. Well, the federal government is changing before our eyes. The Donald Trump administration is cutting jobs, ending programs, freezing spending, and objectively creating confusion. The effect on Davis and Yolo County is more than we can cover today, but we will take a look at some of the impact, specifically the effect on local nonprofits, particularly the impact of the Trump freeze on government grants and funding. Now, those freezes and such are being challenged in courts, so it's a moving target, but we're going to try to keep up with it. We're talking with Jessica Hubbard today. She's the executive director of the Yolo Community Foundation, which is based in Woodland, and she has an eye on the impact. Jessica, thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start by sort of setting the stage. How many nonprofits exist in Yolo County, and how would you quantify or describe their impact on people?
Absolutely. So if you run a list from the Attorney General's office, there's 600 or 700 nonprofits in Yolo County. But that includes every homeowners association, individual little leagues, individual PTAs, all organizations that are absolutely nonprofits serving our community, but aren't necessarily the community-facing, community-supported nonprofits that people think about when they use that term. We estimate that there's about 200, give or take, nonprofits when you're thinking about educational programs, food distribution programs, other programs that offer services to local residents supported by fundraising from local residents.
I took a look at your website, and the list I saw, I think, dated back to when there was sort of a COVID response,
Sure.
but it was an interesting list. That one, I think, had about 50 of the 200, I suppose you're saying, and they range from the Cache Creek Conservancy, Catholic Charities Yolo Solano, to Meals on Wheels, National Alliance on Mental Illness Yolo County, the Short-Term Emergency Aid Committee, and so on. Davis Media Access, the parent of KDRT, is on this list as well. It's a nonprofit. This list, it touches a wide range of human activity, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, all of us are impacted every day of our lives by Yolo County nonprofits. Even for those of us who don't necessarily see ourselves as recipients of nonprofit services, certainly there are people who are receiving critical services every day, whether that's healthcare from organizations like CommuniCare and Witches Healthcare, food distribution services from the Yolo Food Bank, Meals on Wheels, a wide range of their partners, but also educational services that cut across a wide range of socioeconomic statuses. Arts organizations that provide events and activities throughout the county, historical societies, the list goes on and on.
Philosophical question here. Why do nonprofits exist? Why do we have nonprofits?
That's a great question. I think there are two ways you could answer this question. One is if you think about market failures. So, the idea of capitalism, obviously, is that you are distributing goods and services based on desire, based on economics. And for a lot of people, and in a lot of circumstances, I mean, you could debate how well that works, but certainly in our day-to-day life, that keeps the wheels rolling. For some people, for a complex variety of reasons, that's not working. And so nonprofits fill in the gap where capitalism, is missing things that our society has deemed to be important, like, healthcare for children or food for people who can't make it to the end of the month without some support. I think a second reason is where there just is a public good. So if you think about a museum or any of a number of other sort of enrichment programs, not to say that those aren't equally critical, but where the value to our community is more than the sum of its parts. And so it's not individual people buying individual experiences, but us collectively buying the experience for the community at large.
Okay, so that's strikes me as a fairly sort of a comprehensive and a high altitude kind of look at it. I mean, but what I think I'm getting from you is that it does things that the market doesn't, the market economy, let's say, and not necessarily because it's opposed to the market economy, but simply because the market economy, isn't interested in that. Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Or, and what's interesting is I think sometimes it does things the market economy hasn't done yet. I think there's
Oh.
a tremendous opportunity for nonprofits to innovate, to identify new ways of doing things. And in some cases, those ways are able to be done profitably and they can be picked up by the market economy. And in other cases, they continue to be not viable in a straight up, paying for goods received and they'll remain part of the nonprofit sector.
Yeah, of course, and I know some of the ones locally, I mean, they emerged from just simply a charitable impulse. I'm thinking here now the Short-Term Emergency Aid Committee, which basically grew out of some churches and religious institutions in Davis. But they exist to, I mean, their name says it, Emergency Aid Committee, short term. You know, that's not the sort of thing that you buy stock in. It's something that you maybe you just want to help.
Absolutely.
So understanding that we're talking about a quickly changing situation, what are you hearing from local nonprofits about the events coming out of Washington?
I think the biggest thing right now, and this won't surprise you, is uncertainty. We absolutely have come across some nonprofits locally that have already been impacted by the spending freeze, particularly in the food and ag food space and the environmental space. But what I'm hearing from a huge number of nonprofits is they're worried about the impact of the spending freeze, or they anticipate that those freezes or potential cuts will impact them down the road, either directly because they receive federal funding, semi-directly because they receive money that originates with the federal government and gets to them maybe through a state or a local government, or indirectly because this is creating so much economic uncertainty that people either are seeing or expect to see individuals, companies, and foundations give less as a result.
Is there any, I don't know, representative, sort of a maybe a specific example that you can share?
I don't want to speak on behalf of other organizations, but I've received emails from two local organizations, one in the food and ag space and one in the environmental space, saying specifically that they have seen cuts to their funding because of related to the spending freeze.
And so then these are cuts, I imagine, that are affecting what they can do.
Absolutely. And not only what they can do, right? So in some cases, it impacts what services they can deliver. You know, if we have to cut this program, or we have to, deliver X fewer increments of impact. In other cases, it's destabilizing the organization because nonprofits don't run with much extra margin. I mean, we do an annual surveys of the local nonprofit organizations, and we know that extremely few have endowments, like vanishingly few have endowments, and many, many, many have very limited reserves. And so they can't really take that kind of hit. They're spending all of their money to serve our community. They're not stockpiling funds. And so when programs get cut, they don't have a way to pay staff. And so that can impact programs beyond the specific programs that are being impacted. A single staff person does lots of things, especially at our small local nonprofits. So you can't really cut a quarter of a staff person without destabilizing the role. And it's very difficult to build back once you've made those kinds of cuts.
So, these are being challenged in court, and we're talking on February 26th. I want to be precise about the day because it could be different on February 27th, and this rule won't air till early March. But the latest I have is from an Associated Press story published yesterday. A federal judge agreed to continue blocking President Donald Trump's administration from freezing grants and loans, potentially totaling trillions of dollars. It's a preliminary injunction requested by groups representing thousands of nonprofits and small businesses. It's the first such order since the Trump administration announced a sweeping pause on federal aid, stirring up a wave of confusion and anxiety across the United States. That's an Associated Press story by Michael Kunzelman. Is the foundation part of any of these lawsuits? And have you seen any money unfreeze with some of these orders?
We are not personally part of any of the lawsuits. We're a member of some organizations that might be as a standard annual membership, but we are not involved ourselves. And I don't have enough insight to share any examples of local organizations having spending unfrozen. I've certainly seen plenty of chatter in different nonprofit circles about the impacts and the lawsuits, but I don't have any specific examples to share.
Now, you mentioned a survey a minute ago, and I don't think you've released it yet, but boy, that's well timed in terms of trying to get a sense of what the action is. What can you tell us about the survey, and then when will you release that?
Yep, absolutely. So this is our 2025 State of the YOLO Nonprofit Sector Survey. This is the fifth year that we've released this survey. It started during COVID, when we were similarly in unprecedented times and wanted to get a sense of what was going on for our local nonprofits. We've continued to release that survey, to conduct that survey and the associated report, because we find it to be tremendously valuable, not only to us, but to other donors and decision makers in the community who are looking to understand how to support local nonprofits. We had 68 nonprofits participate this year, so a good 30% response rate of what we consider to be active local nonprofits. So Seems pretty close to statistically significant. I do think larger nonprofits are overrepresented since they're more likely to have staff to be on our mailing list and take the time to fill out the report. But it's pretty comprehensive. We do have a wide range of organization types participate. We are, I mean, the number of times the words federal funding were in the comments was substantial. We heard that they're really concerned about the diversity of funding sources. Particularly given everything going on, one of the best ways to weather uncertainty is to have a wide range of revenue streams. Though, as I mentioned earlier, I think a lot expect all of their revenue streams to be impacted.
Generally speaking, how much is federal funding? How important is that to nonprofits? And I know there's an indirect effect, but I imagine they have other sources of income. There's also the state, there's, local donors, obviously.
That's a
What
good question. I don't know the answer to that. What percent of nonprofit charitable revenue is federal? That's a great question. I can look into that and I'll let you know if I find out.
Okay. Well, I would imagine it varies by organization too, as well. I mean,
Absolutely, unquestionably. So, for instance, organizations in the food space seem to report more federal income than other areas. I know that childcare has substantial federal components, healthcare. So, for sure, this varies substantially. Education.
so where do you think this is headed?
It's a great question. We could all probably make a lot of money in the stock market if we knew. I think for nonprofits, what I think, let me back up a little bit. As I mentioned, we started the survey during COVID, and one thing that's been incredibly challenging for nonprofits is the how much we as a society have asked nonprofits to take on over the past 5 years. So in 2020, we saw organizations housing people at unprecedented levels in partnership with our local government. We saw organizations responding to incredibly high need for community, for mental health resources, for family support, for food and housing support. And things got a little better for a little while. But even in the post-pandemic years, what we heard from nonprofits is that inflation ticked up so rapidly after the sort of early pandemic ended that not only was it drastically more expensive to do their work, but they were seeing need going back up in the community because community members were impacted by inflation and therefore had higher needs. I think things got a little better for a little while again. And now there's substantial concern that there will be very high levels of need for economic reasons, that community members will have more need because of the financial instability. And then, in addition, there are particular groups of community members like immigrants, that's obviously very top of mind here in Yolo County, that will have increased need. And so, we're asking these organizations, and I don't have the survey in front of me, but I think it's something like 85% or 75% of Yolo County nonprofits have fewer than five staff members. So, we're asking these organizations to take on these individual people, these individual neighbors and community members to take on very outsized responsibility for meeting the needs of our community. For 5 years, nonprofits have been telling us that one of their greatest concerns is about staff burnout. And I think we are heading right back into a period of time where we're asking those people to put the community ahead of themselves, which is, I mean, that's what they do, right? They work for nonprofits. That's their comfort zone, but it's not sustainable. And particularly when they're then seeing revenue decrease, potentially. Revenue didn't go down in 2024, it went up a little. That's not quite how we asked the question. Most organizations told us that revenue went up. We didn't ask the percent it went up. We were asking about whether they were seeing it go up or down. But expenses keep going up more and need keeps going up. And so we're continuing to ask them to do more with less, and it's not sustainable.
How are Yolo nonprofits doing, let's say, a year ago? I mean, there was the pandemic. Of course, that disrupted everything, not just the nonprofits. We sort of came out of that. Things were starting to return a little bit. Now, obviously, we've had a big political change since the last November's election and Trump won. But I'm wondering, what was the baseline? So a year ago, if I had asked you, how are nonprofits doing in Yolo County a year ago, what would you have told me?
A year ago, I would have said things were looking up, but inflation and the increase, not inflation being one of the drivers, but increasing expenses due to inflation and need was the biggest sort of fly in the ointment for nonprofits a year ago. But in general, we were seeing staff stabilize in terms of, early pandemic, they were making cuts. Everyone was making cuts. They were doing furloughs, they were doing layoffs. They have substantially recovered on a staffing basis. When we did
Okay.
this report last year, that continues to be true. I mean, of course, our survey was based on fiscal 2024, whether that was, whatever their fiscal year was. And so a lot of what we're talking about today is not reflected in 2024 financials and other operational numbers.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a baseline as I was listening to you talk about you went through COVID, sort of came out of it, and now this. And this has a set of uncertainties for different reasons, but I'm getting a sense there's a similar impact. You know, you're just not sure
Yeah,
where this is headed.
that's absolutely right. I think there's probably two substantial factors right now economically. One is the impact of the federal dollars themselves, whether they're frozen, whether they're unfrozen, whether those dollars make their way to the nonprofits and into their programs. And then there is the ripple effects throughout the economy that comes from uncertainty.
To a quick station ID, we are talking with Jessica Hubbard. She is the executive director of the Yolo Community Foundation. And we're talking about the effect of the Trump administration freezes and changes on Yolo nonprofits. I'm Bill Buchanan, and this is Davisville on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, kdrt.org online. Is the experience in Yolo different from what you can see than it is in other parts of the state and country? And I guess another way to ask that is, how do local conditions affect the impact of what's coming out of Washington?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I can't imagine that we're substantially different. I think that one way we could be a little bit different is, as I mentioned, so far, the organizations I'm seeing report actual impact as opposed to concern anticipated impact are disproportionately in the food and ag space and the environmental space. I don't know for sure, but I would suspect that we probably have somewhat more of those kinds of organizations than average. So we may see be seeing a little bit more impact. But of course, those aren't uncommon categories anywhere.
What are you hearing from donors, your donors?
That's a great question. And I'll have a better answer for you in a few weeks. You know, you had asked earlier when our report comes out, and I didn't answer that. It comes out in mid-March, around March 18th, 19th, give or take. And one of the ways we'll launch that report is with a presentation for our fund holders. Those are folks that have donor advised funds and scholarship funds and other charitable giving accounts with the Yolo Community Foundation. So, you know, if we talk again in a few weeks, I'll have a much better answer. I think right now it just continues to be the same uncertainty that most folks have.
I guess I was asking because moments like this, challenges, crises, problems, whatever you want to call it, can have a galvanizing effect.
Absolutely.
You know, people can say, all right, you know, I'm going to step up. Or if they agree with the changes, they may think, oh, I'll just wait and see. Or they may just be preoccupied with their own problems. Towns, counties have different personalities, one to the other. And so I guess I'm wondering, maybe that's just an ongoing question, how donors will respond to this.
I did speak to one donor recently. It's actually in the fall, so after the election, but before inauguration, who was considering moving towards a particular project and decided not to because this person wanted to be able to focus on basic needs, anticipated increasing needs in sort of food and, you know, other sort of basic human needs, base of Maslow's pyramid. And we saw that a lot in the pandemic years. So we saw actually pretty substantially increased charitable giving in 2020, 2021. In response to substantial community need, there was also the wrinkle that the stock market was doing really well. People couldn't spend their discretionary money. So this is a different circumstance. But it wouldn't surprise me if we saw that. If we saw, to the extent that the economy remains reasonably strong, if we saw increased giving in areas that were directly responding to increased community need. And what we saw in the pandemic was organizations in spaces like the arts, sometimes youth development, recreation, environment, potentially saw substantially decreased giving because people were redirecting their giving to that base of the pyramid. I think that's challenging for two ways. One is that organizations, as we mentioned earlier, can't necessarily just pause. When you draw back, you destabilize the organization. And also, I think people don't always recognize the role that a wide variety of organizations play in ensuring we have thriving daily lives. So arts as an example in the pandemic were really critical to some of this mental health and community rebuilding, but it was hard for them to play that role when the funding was all going to sort of more immediate day-to-day needs.
I would imagine there are donors. You know, you may not know their politics, but I'm sure that there's donors in Yolo County to the nonprofits who supported Trump.
Absolutely, unquestionably.
Or, you know, at the very least, they supported the idea that the federal government's too big, too slow, spends foolishly or wastefully. I'm wondering how they've reacted to the federal grant freeze, because it's kind of done in their name.
I don't know the answer, but I do think that's something that's very interesting about charitable giving is that it is, I mean, there's not, I don't think I haven't seen a study on this, but I don't think you would see more charitable giving at one or other or the other end of the political spectrum. I think that you may see different motivations. But to your point, if you believe in a smaller government, a lot of people who believe in a smaller government are highly motivated by the opportunity to do direct giving to organizations that align with their values and what they see as critical needs in their community. So, I think that charitable giving is a tremendous tool for everyone, no matter where you sit on the political spectrum, to carry out the good you want to see in the world. And I think lots of people from a lot of different perspectives might see now as the time to do that, either because they think it is our role, not the federal government's role, to do that funding, or because they see they're concerned about the need created, or both.
An interesting perspective. I mean, I guess that's part of the argument for all these cuts at the federal level, right? Is that what folks are saying is, let's get that money out of the federal government's hand, let's get it in the hands back of the people who earn it, I suppose, and to give directly. That's a whole different argument, a whole different set of perspectives. But I'm just trying to understand, I guess, the point of view there. Another question kind of along these lines, and I guess I'm wondering, how do you think we got here to this point? Do you think that government became sort of vulnerable to a populist backlash because, it was too interested in the wrong things? And again, what the wrong things are is going to vary in the eyes of the beholder. But I'm wondering if there's a lesson here or a reckoning or something that
That's a great question. I think it goes beyond the role or the place that I sit. But I will say that earlier, I mean, we talked about the opportunity for nonprofits to play an innovation role where the market picks up a service or a approach after the nonprofit sector has proven it. The other similar relationship you see is between nonprofits and government, where a nonprofit, not, you know, the nonprofit sector, the philanthropic sector proves an idea and the government takes it to scale. So I think one of the important relationships between the nonprofit sector and the government sector is not only the funding relationship that flows from the government to nonprofits, but also the scaling relationship where a concept flows from the nonprofit sector to the government sector, which just has a range that no other player can take. Now, of course, to your point, some people feel like that's exactly the problem, but historically, that's been a really important piece of the relationship between nonprofits and government.
Well, and as you pointed out at the start, I mean, the word nonprofit covers a whole range of things. I mean, you can say that to people and they might think, oh, organizationally, or they might think about a particular nonprofit they know. But just in Davis, anything from like the local musical support groups that help the kids in school, think of the Madrigals, for example, or the jazz choir, or all these athletic teams, those are all nonprofits. Short-term emergency aid committee is a nonprofit. And then, you've got things like nonprofit hospitals and such as well that are
UC
basically.
Davis is a nonprofit. I mean, the foundation for UC Davis is a nonprofit and is a major player in how UC Davis works.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of variety there. And I guess it's just a thought that is, as we talk about nonprofits, it's good to remember all that. And I'm also struck by your idea that nonprofits is kind of a lab. That's a place you can try out an idea and see if it works. All right. So there's uncertainty. We all have to live with it. What's your advice to nonprofits and to donors and maybe even to recipients of what nonprofits do about things to do or watch or track, I guess is the word I'm looking for, in these next several months as we go through this.
For donors, I would really encourage them to do what they can to give to nonprofits now. I totally get the impulse to keep your powder dry when you're not really sure where the world is going. And there may be a time when people are not in a position to give. But for those that are in a position to give and are in a position to give now, I would encourage them to give now. I think an incredibly p important piece of this is encouraging people to give unrestricted gifts, meaning give to the organization and let the organization decide how best to spend it rather than giving to a particular program or initiative or only for X. The reason for that is that, I mean, the folks that are running these nonprofits day in, day out, they're deeply committed to their missions and they know exactly where the dollars need to be spent in order to best carry out those missions. And as an outsider, as a donor, we're not in the position to see that. So maybe the best way to get food into the hands of kids isn't paying for the food. Which in that example, oftentimes there's cheaper ways for food distribution nonprofits to get food, but to pay for the truck or the gas or to keep the lights on or for the new employee that's going to, orchestrate the distribution system or whatever the case may be. And so by giving an unrestricted gifts, we put organizations in the best perspective to be successful.
You said as part of your answer, it's important to give now. Why now?
I think that the because of this tremendous uncertainty, my concern is that, and we have seen, like we saw this a little bit in our year-end appeal, that people are pulling back a little bit. You know, someone who gave the X amount last year might give half of X this year. And so organizations need to be able to be in a position to continue to strengthen their organizations and their work so they can continue to carry out their work. I would also flag, I believe May 1st, I should check that. I don't want to give the wrong information, but Big Day of Giving is an incredibly important day for philanthropy in the greater Sacramento region. And Big Day of Giving 2025 is indeed Thursday, May 1st. So I would encourage folks to flag that on their calendars and really turn out to support local nonprofits that day.
And I'm thinking too that people give to organizations that they believe in, right? So they would have a sense already. A minute ago, you were talking about sort of trusting the organization to know what it's doing. Presumably, if you're a donor and you're giving to it, you've already kind of got that sense of it that, you know, hey, I want to support this group.
Yeah, I think that's true.
What's a good place to learn about things as they unfold? I mean, we're in a very fragmented information environment right now. There are news stories that are covering this, of course. You can find any number of opinions about it. But if I'm just a donor in Yolo County and I kind of want to get a sense of it, are there good places to kind of monitor this, track this?
Well, when we publish our report in mid-March, information will be available on yolocf.org. That's the Yolo Community Foundation website. We will also have, as I mentioned, have launch events. So there'll be a lot of information there about how to learn what we are learning. I would also encourage folks to go to bigdayofgiving.org/YoloCounty. And while that is the website that is used on Big Day of Giving, it's actually a year-round resource. It's for a program called Giving Edge, which is a comprehensive database of nonprofits in Yolo County, and I'm not in Yolo County, in the whole Sacramento region, including Yolo County. And so last I checked, there were something like 120 Yolo County nonprofits. It's not every single nonprofit, but it is the vast majority of operating sort of community-facing nonprofits in Yolo County.
Okay. You know, and it occurs to me too, we never really said what the Yolo Community Foundation is, but from your website, you know, you exist to sort of encourage and support nonprofits and to provide some leadership in that area.
Yeah, and not just nonprofits, but donors as well. So our mission is to inspire and support giving and provide philanthropic leadership in Yolo County. We do that by inspiring giving to local nonprofits, most significantly by offering donor advice funds and scholarship funds and other giving vehicles that make giving convenient, tax advantage, and impactful. We also support donors with thought leadership products like this report, the State of the Yolo Nonprofit Sector Report, staff services and events, and then serve nonprofits with grants and training programs.
Well, Jessica, thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking with Jessica Hubbard. She's the Executive Director of the Yolo Community Foundation. I am Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville on KDRT 95.7 or kdrt.org/Davisville online. Thanks for listening.